Greetings and may the peace of Christ be with you. Welcome to Holy Family Radio. This is Deacon Jim Thorndale and I'm privileged to be your host today. I warmly invite you to enter into another conversation in living the Catholic life. You know, in our journey through life, many times the Lord is calling us to different experiences, but sometimes we're just a little bit reluctant to make that journey. We're not quite sure where God is calling us, and even if He is calling us, the reluctance within our spirit sometimes can be overwhelming, and we really have to at times stretch ourselves to really follow the Lord and where He's asking us to go. Today on this Living the Catholic Life, we're going to encounter somebody who took that challenge. Her name is Kim Brown. I'll introduce her to you in a minute, but she wrote a beautiful book. It's called The Spiritual Lessons Along the Camino. And if you don't know what that is, she went on a pilgrimage to France, Spain, and Portugal. A part of that pilgrimage included the Camino de Santiago for 40 days. Her pilgrimage included opportunities to embrace the faith of those who came before her by visiting some of the places that of her favorite saints, as well as holy sites where a Marian apparition had been taking place. And her pilgrimage included the following towns: Paris, Chartres, Lisieux, Mont-Saint-Michel, Lourdes, Fatima, Santarém, Avila, Madrid, Barcelona, Montserrat, as well as the towns along the Camino. And she will tell us about that, but the Camino Santiago is called the Way of St. James in English, and it's a pilgrimage route in Europe for the people that have used for centuries. And so she walked this France route, which started at St. Jean-Pied de Porte in the Pyrenees of France and concluded in Santiago de Compostela on the west coast of Spain. I want to introduce my guest. Her name is Kim Brown. Kim, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me today.
Oh, you're welcome. I might have butchered a few of those names, but you're going to have to help me along on that. But, you know, this was an interesting journey that you took, and I know that if not hundreds of thousands, millions of people have gone on this pilgrimage. Is that not correct?
That is correct. As far as it's one of the oldest pilgrimage routes there is for the Christian faith, and so it's always been a religious pilgrimage, but then over the last couple of decades, you have a lot of people that just go on it for kind of a holiday, not necessarily intentionally going on it for religious, but as I talk about in the book, there's no way to not have some moments there where you begin to think or question about your spirituality or God.
Exactly.
Just the whole pilgrimage is set to make you think about God.
Yeah. You know, it's often been said, all acts that go on in our life are somewhere spiritual. There's a spiritual sense to everything that we do in our life. But, you know, I think it's important, first of all, Kim, that the audience gets to know you, because this was not something that you sounded like that you chose on your own.
God was definitely my tour guide, I will say that, on the trip. You know, probably like a lot of people out there, I was, you know, had a very nice life, a very, you know, life that is just, you know, I had my career, I had my home, I had my friends, I had a very comfortable life.
Yes.
And I think, you know, a lot of us, you know, especially in America, you know, a lot of our lifestyle is set up about comfort, you know.
Exactly.
And for me, it was really, you know, growing in my faith, you know, long before I ever went away on this pilgrimage, and, you know, slowly, you know, God calling me, you know, slowly responding with some baby steps and just really hearing Him, knowing that I desired Him more and more and wanting to really figure out what God was calling me to. And
yeah.
So that kind of made the ultimate jump. But, I mean, it did. I worked at a college for 10 years. I was an administrator at a college.
Okay.
Great career. I loved my career. I loved working with my students. I loved my colleagues. It was really a wonderful, you know, job that I was given, that I had the opportunity to be in so many people's lives.
Yes.
And yet I kept on saying, God calling me. I didn't know at the time. I thought, well, is God calling me to go work in His church as a lay person, or is God calling me to religious life? Because I was really growing in my spiritual life. And so, you know, when I think you grow in your spiritual life, you know, you do ask, you know, what is it, God, do you want me to do?
Yes.
You know, when we're growing up as little children, people say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And, you know, somebody, your teachers might say, do you want to be a doctor, an astronaut, or a firefighter, or a teacher? You know, but we never say, God, what do you want me to be when I grow up?
Exactly.
That's at least not a question that as a kid I ever asked God.
Well, let me ask you this, Kim. Are you a cradle Catholic?
I am a cradle Catholic.
Okay.
So we were definitely, as Catholics growing up, very involved, especially in different service opportunities.
Okay.
And one of the most structural foundations for me as growing up as a Catholic was whenever I was a junior Catholic Daughter of America. And it was just a wonderful organization for young women to be involved in.
Yeah.
But we really did a lot of service opportunities. And so that was a very strong formation for me. But when I went away to high school, I didn't go away. I still lived at my house with my family. But when I went to high school, my parents didn't force us to get confirmed. And in our diocese, we always got confirmed in high school.
Okay.
And because of that, I kind of got busy with things of high school and working my job. And I never went through the confirmation classes to get confirmed. And at the same time, we had switched parishes. And so the parish that we kind of grew up at, you know, we were at a different parish. And so I just didn't continue with my religious education at those in high school years. And so then I went off to college. And, you know, when I went to college, I had people, you know, well, what are you? Well, I'm a Catholic. And then they would say, what do you believe? And, you know, I didn't know where to begin when they asked me that question, what do you believe, if they were also a Christian. I was like, well, there's God and there's mm-hmm. Jesus and he died on the cross, you know, because I didn't understand what, you know, what they were trying to get at, you know, as far as, you know, the differences between Protestants or Catholicism.
Right.
And so as time went on, I started learning more and more, and I kind of, you know, learned about the other Christian denominations. I learned about, you know, some of the other different world religions. But to me, Catholicism was, you know, everything that I knew about Catholicism or what Catholicism believed seemed true to me.
Exactly.
And so when I was in college, my church that my parents were at offered a confirmation class, and it was like a one night only because they were trying to get a lot of adults who had never gotten confirmed to get confirmed in the faith. And so I went to that one night only confirmation class and got confirmed. And over time, I would start learning on my own a lot more about the faith and having a real reconversion, because a one night only class to try to teach everything that the faith, you know, beliefs obviously did not happen. So,
sure.
But it was really, you know, in college with me saying, you know, I do believe that this is the truth. You know, when you learn about when other churches started or how they started, you know, something just always didn't seem right.
Well, let me ask this, Kim, and this is not a confessional, but during your college years, did you remain a faithful Catholic?
I was not. As far as going to weekly mass, mm-hmm. That was not something that I regularly did.
Okay.
Now, as far as, you know, as far as sins and having to go to the confessional, I wasn't off at college, you know, partying hard and needing to go to the confessional per se.
Yep.
I just was not actively participating. And part of that was, in all honesty, I never knew missing mass was a sin.
Yeah. Well, you're not alone, as many Catholics are.
I mean, my upbringing just, you know, really wasn't that. And so, you know, sometimes depending on what was happening in my jobs that I was having during college, you know, was whether or not I would be able to go to mass that week. On, you know, and our church was pretty nice that they offered in the college town. They had a Sunday evening mass.
Yep.
And so that was kind of nice for college students to be able to catch, you know, and be able to go to mass over the weekend. But I wasn't going to mass regularly. And I had originally went to the Catholic Center when I was in college. And, you know, the Catholic Center just really had no programs or no opportunities to get involved. So I joined a non-denominational group, and that's actually the ones that started asking, well, what do you believe?
Mm-hmm.
Because they were kind of brought up to, you know, for them to learn what Catholics believe, but it was usually, you know, misconceptions and misunderstanding. And, you know, so sometimes I didn't know the answer. So my grandma Brown was actually a great resource. Because when I was in college, if I ever had a question, I'd call my grandma who lived in Indiana. And I would say, Grandma, what about this? Why do Catholics do this? Or I was told Catholics do this. Do they do this? And my grandma would be able to answer it. She had worked for the Archdiocese in Indianapolis.
Yes.
And the way that we always talk about grandma is she was Google before there was a Google, because she worked in their library department and their media area. And when people had a question, they'd call the diocese, and she would have to go find the book, look up the answer, and then call them back with the answer. So we always joke that, you know, her early job was being Google and looking up answers for people.
So your grandma Brown became a great sort of catechesis.
Oh, wonderful.
And learning. Oh, that is wonderful. That's what, you know, let me ask you this. When people would ask you that question, what do you believe, there must have been a real angst in your heart or somebody challenging you to really articulate what you believe. You must have found that a little bit frustrating at the beginning.
You know, because when I was in college, I didn't know what they were trying to get at, you know, because so often so many of their churches, you know, maybe put a very negative light or, you know, spread, you know, rumors pretty much about what the Catholics believed.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, when I work with youth ministry groups and I teach youth, I'm like, if anybody ever asks you what you believe, just recite the Nicene Creed. You know, and I mean, as soon as you do that, I mean, that's what we believe, you know, and by knowing how to respond, okay, you know what, I just gave you a full in-depth look of our faith and what we believe,
yeah.
You know, and you're able to put it all there, but I just never understood that. So it was like, well, I mean, there's God and Jesus, because I wasn't brought up to understand what other denominations believe, you know, like, I didn't realize that, you know, the Protestants didn't believe in the, you know, the Eucharist or mm-hmm. have a Eucharist even.
Sure.
I didn't even know what one of their services looked like. You know, when I was in high school, it was actually kind of funny. I went to one night, one of the youth groups were from another, from I think it was the Baptist church. They were hosting an event. They were having like some like speakers come in, and it was all about purity. And so they had some speakers come in for this talk. And so the whole high school, you know, it was promoted all over the high school. And so I went with it with some of my friends. And the guy up at the front near the end of the night, he was doing what now I know is called an altar call, but he, you know, asked if you believe in Jesus Christ, raise your hand. So I put my hand up. You know, he asked a couple more questions about, you know, very basic. Do you believe in this? Do you believe that he died for your sins? You know, my hand's still up. So then he's like, come forward if you believe that. So I walk up and, you know, they pray. I walk back to my seat. And then like, a couple weeks later, my parents get a postcard in the mail and they come to me and they say, Kim, are you leaving the Catholic Church? And I said, what do you mean? And they're like, well, we got this, you know, thing saying that you were saved at this church. I was like, no, they just asked me if I believed in Jesus Christ, like, you know, which, you know, for me as a Christian, that's a standard. Yeah, I believe in that, you know.
That's right.
That was nothing different. But so, you know, it's just, you learn about the different faiths, especially when you go off to college.
Exactly.
It's a great time to learn, but it's also a great time that, you know, if you don't have a solid foundation, for a lot of people, they do fall away during that time, you know, because there is temptation, but also a lot of times there's, you know, other good-hearted Christians, but sometimes, you know, they're...
Exactly.
They have a good heart, but sometimes they pull you away from the truth. And unfortunately for a lot of people, when they pull them away from the truth,
exactly,
you know, there's nothing for them to stand on. So then they just kind of go away from the church for a while.
And then what you made a good comment, you know, a college can be very good, either draw you back into your faith, or it can take you away from it, as you said, because if you're not prepared to defend it and you don't have clarity, then what you hear sometimes can make sense, and you start questioning your own faith, the Catholic faith. But that, it's important that we're all catechized and really have an understanding, be able to defend our faith. We all need to be an apologist for the Catholic Church.
Amen to that.
Yeah. So here you are going to college, and then you got a great job, but... I remember reading your book. You start to become Samuel a little bit. You're starting to hear a call from God.
Yeah, you know, everything was going really good in my life. You know, I was, you know, top of the game on my career. You know, and I was really involved at church, and I just loved church. And you know, when I was working at church, like, you know, in volunteer capacities, like, that was always the highlight of my week.
Yep.
I loved it. And I guess Grandma Brown kind of comes back into the story at this point. She, one day I was visiting her, she was in a nursing home, and I believe at this point she was 98 years old. And I'm talking with her because I'm going to give a talk to a group of women, and I'm giving her, you know, I'm talking with her about the talk that I'm going to give. And it's a real raw, you know, like a pep talk. It had nothing to do with, you know, vocations, religious life. It was just a raw, you know, about us being stronger as a community and you know, helping one another.
Sure.
And at the end of it, my grandma says, Kim, are you thinking about becoming a nun? And that really was a turning point for me in my faith journey, because it really made me, at first I was scared to death, I'll be honest with you, Deacon.
Yep.
I mean, my life, I was very, you know, happy with my life. You know, I was, you know, very much, if God called me to marriage, you know, I wanted to get married and be a stay-at-home mom and have, you know, lots of kids.
Sure.
If I wasn't called to marriage, then I would live this committed single life, and I could, you know, really, you know, do a lot of volunteer opportunities that a lot of times when people are married with, you know, responsibilities of their husband and their children, they can't be up at the church all the time.
Exactly.
And so I was really content with those two lifestyles, and I had never thought about religious life, because where I grew up at in the Fort Worth Diocese, we never saw sisters. We never saw nuns. And mm-hmm. so that just was not something I ever thought about. And so when my grandma asked me that, I left that day and I cried, and I went to church straight to the tabernacle, and adoration was actually taking place, and I was just crying in there, because I thought I was being this really good Christian in my life. Like, you know, sometimes we want to give ourselves pats on our back thinking we're better than what we are. And I really...
Human nature, isn't it?
Because, say that again?
I said, that's human nature.
We do think we are pretty good sometimes.
That's right.
And I was just standing there crying, because I realized that for me, I thought I was being this great Christian, but if I was not open to God, you know, if he was possibly calling me to religious life, that I wasn't open to God at all. Like, if I was saying, God, you can have all these areas of my life, but this part of my life, you can't touch, then I'm not being, you know, open to God at all.
You know, Kim, I've often said to people, and you just said it in a different way, I said, if you're not totally committed to Jesus, you are totally deceiving yourself. And that's exactly what you're saying. If there's one area in your life that you say, I can't commit this to you, it's a deception. Because you're not totally totally committing to Christ in that respect.
That is absolutely true. I mean, we really, you know, I think for Christians, sometimes we get comfortable. It really is that, you know, getting comfortable. And we have to, you know, really make sure that all of our life is open to God. Because from that moment, getting asked that question, really a process of me becoming open to God, it was literally a year and a half later when God had worked on me for that whole year and a half, you know, was teaching me small lessons, but, you know, and I became open to religious life, and I was really kind of just at that, finally a year and a half later, it was like, God, just tell me if you want me to become a sister, I'll go become a sister. Like, you know, it's going to be hard for me, but I know you'll give me the strength. But by a year and a half later, I had made the decision. I started selling my stuff to simplify my life because I realized as a single, you know, person, I did not need everything that I had.
Mm-hmm.
I never lived in debt. I lived way below my means, but I still had more than I needed. And, so I sold my stuff. I ended up renting out my house and, resigning from my job. And, a year and a half later from that, question getting asked, I went away on pilgrimage to really disconnect, to try to listen to God because, a lot of people, I'm really blessed with a great church community.
Yeah.
But, you know, some people would come tell me, you know, God told me you're supposed to get married. Other people would tell me God told me you're supposed to be a sister. And so God was, you know, apparently given, you know, telling other people, but I hadn't heard him. So I was like, okay, I need to just disconnect from all this noise and everybody telling me what I'm supposed to do and just really go hear the only voice that matters, and that's God's voice.
Exactly.
Kim, that's where I went away on that pilgrimage.
Let me just go back a little bit, too. When you were talking about this year and a half, there had to be some restless nights. There had to be some crying and some tears. There had to be some real uncertain times of where God was leading you, and yet you continued to persevere. I mean, how was that like for that year and a half?
You know, the question of discerning the vocation of religious life for me, because it was a great unknown. You know, I didn't grow up, you know, having priest over for dinner at our house.
Yep.
You know, it was only in my adult life that I actually, had come to know priest in a friend matter, you know, as far as having some friends that were priests. And so, but I still really had never really had, you know, known sisters or nuns and that lifestyle. You know, and there's a huge fear because when I did go and learn and I went to Come and See, you know, I learned about, you know, the separation, you know, all of us, when we take our vocation, you know, we choose to follow God.
Yes.
But when you choose to be a religious, you follow God in a very radical way. And
that's
it's
right.
That Jesus on the shores of Galilee saying, come follow me. And you literally detach from not, you know, the things are not that important, you realize, but it's the people.
Exactly.
And during that time, it was like, you know, when I quit my job, you know, I mean, I cried. I mean, the colleagues that I had worked with for 10 years, I mean, they were good friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm walking away from, you know, seeing these people on a regular basis.
And let me ask you this. There had to be people who didn't understand what you were doing. They must have thought, are you kidding me?
You know, obviously, because I hadn't grown up knowing sisters, a lot of the people that were my friends obviously also had not grown up knowing sisters.
Right.
You know, both Catholic and non-Catholic friends. So a lot of people, you know, when I quit my job and, you know, my resignation was just, you know, I know God's leading me somewhere else. I didn't know where, so I put that in my resignation letter, you know, so they knew that it was really me being led by God. But, you know, there was really a lot of questions, you know, because, you know, people wonder, well, what in the world are you thinking? I had some of my friends who are, you know, great, you know, Catholics, very active in the faith, but they've never known sisters or anything. And they're like, Kent, you're way too outgoing to be a sister. You're too funny to be a sister. And as I've been in this process more and more, I've visited with different communities. It's, you know, it's really funny because, you know, a lot of the sisters I've met, I mean, they're hilarious. They're fun. You know,
of course.
I've, you know, played basketball with some of them, and they're just like you and me.
They're human.
Except for they've chosen a very radical way of life, you
That's
know,
right.
that for most of us is unfathomable, you know, to literally say that I own no money. I don't even own enough money to buy a can of soda. you know, I have to ask permission when my shoes are out to, you know, I ask for a new pair of shoes. Like, that's very radical for our culture. That's very independent.
Yes. It's very hard for our culture to understand that type of living. Let me ask you this, Kim. When you wrote your resignation letter, did you put down the reason in it?
I had put part of the letter did include the fact that I was feeling called by God, but at that point I didn't know where God was leading me. Mm-hmm. Whether it was to work in the church as a layperson or to religious life.
Yep.
And so I just put that. I felt like God was calling me. I wanted to work, you know, in the ministry. At that point, I wasn't really sure if God was going to maybe lead me to be like a principal at a Catholic school, because I had looked into that, and my skills were transferable from a college administrator and a secular institute to the skills as far as strategic planning and the finances. At a principal, I also, because I love youth ministry and, you know, I had looked at the possibility of, you know, maybe doing full-time youth ministry.
Sure.
And then, you know, of course, then there was a religious, life option. And so that was kind of like, well, that's wherever God would place me, whether I'm out in, you know, an order, you know, doing parish missions, or I'm the sister at the house cooking and cleaning.
Yes.
You know, there's those options. And so, I didn't put like a very specific, because at that point I didn't know where God was going to lead me ultimately, other than just I want to, you know, go, you know, so God's calling me away and I want to work, you know, as far as in a ministry capacity.
Sure. I just want to remind our listeners, this is Holy Family Radio. This is Deacon Jim Thorndahl, and I'm right now with Kim Brown, the author of Spiritual Lessons Along the Camino, and we're talking about this beautiful book she's written and her journey here. I want to get back to Kim. Kim, the reason I asked if you put that in writing, because that really probably was the beginning for you of really of living a radicalized life and letting people know that there's something beyond what your job that you're going to do, something deeper and more profound that you're starting to enter into. And that was a witness to those people.
Very much so. It definitely, you know, draws people, because, you know, so often we're in the rat race, pretty much.
Exactly.
The American dream is built upon, you know, making yourself, you know, wealthy, you know, and mm-hmm. being able to afford things. And to really say, you know, I'm open to the possibility of, you know, literally taking, you know, a life of poverty, is really radical. And, you know, I've had, you know, different people, even who aren't Catholic or who might be anti-Catholic, you know, when we were talking about it, and I'm talking about the vows, you know, they hear the word poverty. Okay, you think poverty, but then they realize that that meant that where I own my own home, that my home that, you know, is, you know, paid for will no longer, like, I give that up. And it kind of really, it shocked some people, but it also made them realize there's something real here, you know?
Exactly.
You don't just give up a home because, you know, you have a little whim, or, you know, you want to go pretend to do something. I mean, that's open to a very radical possibility.
It is. So here you are, you're starting to dispose of your stuff. You're starting to strip down to just being Kim and really working for the Lord. And what drives you to this this pilgrimage to the Camino?
Well, as I was planning, I had always been just the very first saint that I was ever really attracted to was the Little Flower, Saint Therese of Lisieux.
Oh yes.
And she is a saint, just really was amazing for me when I learned about her, and then, you know, she really did become a friend. And so originally I just wanted, that was my main place I wanted to go. You know, so it meant that I would probably fly into Paris and then, you know, go to Lisieux. Well, then as time was going on, you know, one of my friends who was a youth minister at the parish that I'm at, he said, well, you got to go to Lourdes too. And I had heard about Lourdes, but it had never spoken to me. But I thought, okay, you know, he's really set on this, so I might as well go. And then I had a friend say, you know, Kim, you know, this is the first time you have time, like, because, you know, usually in our jobs we have a week of vacation at a time.
Exactly.
My boss really didn't like me to take 2 weeks at a time, just because the area that I was over, that was it was a fairly large department, and so mm-hmm. because of that, when I was gone for 2 weeks, that meant that for 2 weeks he had to do my job. So so he, you know, preferred me to take a week at a time. And so my friend said, Kim, you've got all the time, you know, that you have, why don't you walk the Camino? I had seen the movie that's called The Way,
mm-hmm.
But it didn't speak to me, you know, in this yearning that I want to go do that. I always loved the outdoors and, you know, hiking. I would, you know, you read the book, so you kind of know what all happened there.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I used to be very athletic, and so, like, hiking trips, you know, so I thought, well, that might be something to look into. And so, you know, it's kind of like I'm going to have this time, and I want to disconnect, and I want to hear what God's talking and wanting me to do. So it just, it tied in perfectly. But it really was just on a friend saying, why don't you go walk the Camino? And I didn't read any books ahead of time on it, you know, and it was actually a priest friend. Before I was leaving Texas, he says, well, which Camino route are you going to walk? And I thought, there's more than one Camino route?
You were learning.
You know, I was like, oh, there's more than one Camino route. So finally, after I had enough people ask me about, you know, where all I was going, I actually sat down and spent 3 hours when I was at my sister's place in Virginia to kind of plan the route of the trip.
Right.
Because I just kind of, you know, I didn't, like, book anything as far as, you know, train tickets or hotels or anything to that nature. But it was really just more, this is the city in order of the cities that I'm going to go to. So it made logical sense. I wasn't going back and forth across the country.
Yep.
And then I knew where I would end up at to start walking the Camino.
Yeah.
And so, based on the different Camino routes, I chose to walk the Camino Francis, which is the most popular route. And it's also called the social Camino.
Yep.
Because more people walk it. And then that Camino route also has more places along the way that if you need to go at a slower pace, or like somebody that might only need to walk 10 kilometers a day,
exactly.
They have more opportunities to stop and sleep.
Kim, how many miles would you say did that, or kilometers, did that encompass that walk?
The walk that I did was 800 kilometers, and so that's 500 miles.
Right,
roughly.
Okay. Now, and I know you said, and I read the book, and you said you were athletic, but you did suffer some pain along the way as I was reading in there.
You know, I tell people often that I'm really glad that spiritually God had been training me, since I did not train physically, mm-hmm. because had I not been spiritually, you know, sound, I definitely think I would have probably quit with some of the injuries, you know, because going a relay, I really thought, you know, how difficult is walking?
Mm-hmm.
And this is coming from the girl that lives, I guess, in North Texas where everything's flat.
Of course.
And, you know, we drive in our cars in America and we try to find the closest parking space to the grocery store.
Always.
So I really just didn't think it'd be that difficult. And the very first day on the Camino, the French Pyrenees, which is like apparently the steepest inclines of any Camino route, I definitely was like, oh my. You know, I prayed a lot and I offered it up to God and that first day was like, I did not prepare for this, you know, and you definitely, it's kind of like, you know, sometimes you might think you're ready and, you know, all of a sudden something comes your way and you're not prepared for it yet. God gives you the grace to handle it. And so, on the Camino, you know, it started off with just like a little ankle issue.
Mm-hmm.
And God always provided. I mean, you know, one night when it first was happening, I had an Italian doctor that slept next to me. And it was kind of funny because, she spoke English better than I spoke Italian. And so then we also had a little Spanish that we both could speak. She could speak more Spanish than I. And, she says, the first night she says, I'm a magician. And I thought, magician, she's trying to look at my ankle because she saw me, like, trying to, you know, work on my ankle.
Right.
And, you know, but apparently in Italy, if I understood correctly, a magician is a doctor.
Okay.
But it really was kind of weird, you know, you're like, let's have a magician work on my foot here. But just all along the Camino, like, when injuries would occur, you know, there was somebody along the way to help you out. And it was really beautiful in the sense of, you know, really this collective world community walking the Camino. We're all trying to help each other in that sense.
Exactly.
So, you know, it started with the ankle, you know, and that definitely swelled up. I had to, you know, cut into my shoes a little bit, my evening shoes that I wore,
mm-hmm.
because just the foot wasn't working. And then the knee went, and then ultimately when I had some, I guess my groin got pulled, that's when
that's very painful.
Definitely became a struggle. But
yeah.
It was really a blessing, and I tell people that had I not had that suffering on that pilgrimage, it would not have been the same experience, because it made it for me a very much a deeper relationship with God, because
sure.
It really was every day, let me offer this up.
You know, I'm looking in your book right now in lesson 3, and the end of it, you said so much of our culture is about comfort and pleasure, but usually our growth occurs during our trials. Think of Peter's trial during the Lord's sentencing. That trial caused Peter the growth he needed, from overconfidence in himself to confidence in Jesus. And then I put a footnote on here for me to read, too. I said, the culture, we're a culture that avoids suffering because we fail to see the value of it. And people don't understand that there can be a salvific suffering we go through, and we offer it up as you were doing. You really offer up for the Lord and for those of other souls.
It's very true. I mean, we do so many things to avoid the suffering.
Yeah.
But I really think that suffering is where those trials is where really that strength and that we almost become a new person, you know, when we accept those things.
Exactly.
It takes us from that child relationship to that more mature adult relationship with God.
Did you have a sense of Satan along the way tempting you to give in, to stop the journey? I'm sure you did, but I've got to ask the question.
You know, there's definitely temptations along the way, you know. I mean, you definitely, the first day, you know, we were at those places and I'm sitting there stretching and it's like, can I continue doing this? You know, walking in, you know, very cold weather, or the rainy weather all day and you're in wet clothes.
Yep.
And, you know, you're sleeping with a ton of people. When one person got sick in a place, it, you know, it kind of spread kind of quickly. You know, going to a pharmacy and sometimes having to act out when you're sick what you need.
Yep.
You know, you really sometimes think, you know, is it not worth it or should I just quit? But that's really where that perseverance comes. And, you know, it's like, you know, for me at the very beginning of the pilgrimage, I offered it up to God. So he's going to give me the strength. I'm going to go as long as I can go. And if I can move my feet, no matter how slow it might be, I'm going to keep going. But, you know, there's temptations on, you know, wanting to quit. You know, there's also, you know, temptations sometimes. On the Camino, the one thing that really struck me as odd was the mass, the time of the mass in the towns that had evening mass.
Right.
Typically was almost the exact same time that they offered the pilgrim's menu.
Yeah.
So after you've walked all day long, and typically for lunch, like I just carried a baguette, I might have like some of the little sausage that you could get in Spain, you know, but it was very crude lunch, you know?
Exactly.
It was really odd. And then the pilgrim's dinner, which was, they were very, you know, large portions and very much fulfilling food, because on days that I ate that meal, the next day I felt pretty good. But on days that I didn't eat the pilgrim's menu, I might just eat a smaller meal, like a baguette again for dinner.
Right.
I felt very weak the next day because your body, you know, definitely is going through some massive changes and you need to replenish it.
Exactly.
And yet it was very odd because the pilgrim's menu, a lot of towns, it was the exact same time as the mass, or it didn't allow for fast to receive the Eucharist.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was always like, well, I'm going to go to the mass, you know, but, it was really interesting in that. But you could get tempted, you know, because, you know, some nights, you know, it's like, you know, you go to the little market in town or the market's closed early. So you just have this like really what I would call like a gas station style selection for dinner.
Of course.
You know, and versus, you know, going to a pilgrim's menu. So there's those temptations. And then definitely, you know, at the end when I was in a lot of pain, you know, in the book I talk about, you know, I guess that final temptation about, you know, well, I could just skip mass tonight because I'll go tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, I think in our spiritual lives, you know, I don't think we initially, you know, say, well, I'm not going to do this for God, but it's like a little line, you know?
Sure.
I mean, we're never typically, you know, Satan never comes at us with a, hey, I want you to go murder this person. You know, it's a much smaller, more subtler, you know, sin or more subtler, you know, oh, you need to go do this. So don't worry about, you know, if you read the scripture every morning before you go to work, why don't you just sleep in that extra 5 minutes and skip the
exactly.
scripture reading just today.
You fulfilled that. You know, you've done a good job.
Those little things is usually our downfall. It's usually never a big sin that we've committed, but it's a little thing that we slowly let our spiritual lives
sure.
die.
Well, let me ask you this, Kim. On your journey, now everybody with you wasn't Catholic, obviously. Were you encouraged by any other Catholics along the journey for Mass?
I definitely was. Right off the bat, I met two guys, and they were brothers from Indiana, and both of them were also on a discernment really open to God and where God was leading them. And they were absolutely awesome on the very beginning of my journey to meet. And we actually then, like, we met up again in a town. I was going to the market, and all of a sudden they were at lunch, you know, and they started waving to me. And so I went and had lunch with them. And then again at the very end of my journey, when I finished in Santiago, that night when I had gone to confession, they were there at that church. And so then we went out, you know, for dinner afterwards, you know, and it was kind of neat because we had from day one seen each other on the Camino. And then for, you know, my final day, you know, arriving in Santiago to see them and to be able to celebrate with them.
Sure.
And both of them were very guys striving for holiness. They were both guys, you know, trying to be men of God. And
sure.
So it was really wonderful because You know, when we did walk together, you know, at the beginning, like when we stopped for lunch, like everybody kind of got out there, you know, divine office and did their own divine office or their own, you know, daily reading. And, you know, it was very contrast to most other pilgrims that I would walk with. So I met those two guys, both discerning, and one since then has entered into monastic life. And then I also met another guy from North Carolina that was discerning, and, you know, him, I never actually, you know, had any kind of follow-up contact information, so right. I don't know what happened with him. And then there was also the father and the son that I met from Texas. And they were just really awesome. And just, I only met them one day on the Camino, but it was like they really helped to fill up my cup that day, just having, you know, these awesome, you know, conversations of God with them. And, you know, God gave you somebody to fill up, because you can go on and, you know, talk with other people, but it's also, you need to be recharged as well. And we get recharged through the Eucharist, but we also get recharged through our brothers and sisters lifting us up and having, you know, good, holy conversations.
Exactly. You know, I'm just looking at your book here again, too, because you had talked about the parable of the sower, where the seed is sown on the path and the one who hears the word. And so you're kind of meeting different people along the way on these parable of the seed and the sower. Some are more entrenched in God and some are more loose. Loosely planted, and it sounds like you really had a mixture of a lot of different people on this journey.
There was just, I mean, it was every type of person you could imagine on this Camino. And I mean, literally, I say it was people from all over the world. I'd never met anybody from Antarctica, but I met people from every other continent. And so it was really just beautiful, because you do meet, you know, the world. And so often, you know, we can get caught up in our town, in our city, our state. And this is our world,
yes.
But it's good to be exposed to the world at large, and, you know, to understand how other people live, or how other people in different cultures, you know, how they might think or how they might respond to something.
Yep.
But it was really just a wonderful experience. And I'll say, for me, it was probably at this point in my life, it was the greatest opportunity that Christ had ever put me in for evangelization, as far as meeting so many people. But there was a real hunger. They might not have realized that they were hungry for God, but there was just such a hunger that, you know, they would be drawn and, you know, they would engage you in a conversation,
right?
You know, about God or about your faith or about what's going on, because they lack something, but they could also sense that for some reason you had something different. And I had one girl that even told us that it was after me and the guy from North Carolina had come back from Mass one night that she could tell there's something different about us,
yeah,
after we went to Mass, you know. We still walked with our, you know, our limp from the, you know, the day of pain. But, you know, she could tell that there was something different, that, you know, and it was really radiating that light,
yeah,
you know, from simply being fed, you know, through the Eucharist. You know, that was just a gift that we were able to receive on the Camino that, you know, not everybody, you know,
yep,
you
exactly.
know, went to receive.
Let me ask you this, Kim. When you started on that journey on the Camino, and you had told us in college you really didn't have that profound understanding of your faith, did you feel more able, you probably did a lot of studying, did you feel more able to defend your faith at that point then when you started that journey?
You know, without a doubt, from my college years to being on the Camino, there was a great amount of study that I had done. You know, as I started learning more about my faith, or, you know, for me, I was what, you know, some people would have called previously a cafeteria Catholic,
mm-hmm.
you know. Oh, I believe this, but this isn't right. And in my complete audacity, you know, I thought I was smarter than the 2,000-year mm-hmm. history of the church. And I know there's many, many of my brothers and sisters that, you know, also fall in the same category that I fell into, was that, oh, I know better than them, you know. And for me, one of the issues was confession. You know, I just always thought, you know, well, God, well, one, he's God. He knows my sins, but, you know, I don't have to say them out loud. You know, and then two, sometimes we fall in the thing, well, you know, I confess them to God. I don't have to go to a priest. But, you know, it was actually at an event where, you know, I had heard different people on why they went to confession.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't been in 20 years at that point from when I made the sacrament as a child. And I went to confession when I was, I just remember it was just a wonderful, very freeing experience for me.
Yes.
And I literally, after that, you know, after that experience, I was like, I'm going to kind of research, you know, I want to look at more of the rational, the logical side behind this, because for me, when it, you know, it comes to faith, I would love to be one of those people that just, you know, 100% is in the heart, but I also very much, my mind and my heart have to align. And so, you know, I felt it in my heart after the confession, just how free it felt. But then I wanted to learn about. So, you know, I was definitely reading the scriptures, you know, that relate to confession, and then learning about the church and confession. And I was like, huh, the church is right on this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Amazing.
You know,
huh?
And so one by one, as a cafeteria Catholic, okay, I'm gonna buy the Catholic, you know, sauce that they're selling. And I just started, anything that I, you know, questioned, it was really, let me just honestly learn why the Catholics teach it this way.
Exactly.
And the church was always right.
Exactly.
You know, 2,000 years of some of the best minds in our world, they got it right.
Exactly. This beautiful church, this magisterium, this beautiful catechism that is so rich in depth and knowledge and the truth that leads you to the fullness of faith.
Well, and we just live in an incredible time. I mean, the fact that I can access writings from the first, you know, second century, I mean, I have that access that obviously, you know, Christians before us never had.
Sure.
And so there's no reason for us to not be knowledgeable of our faith in today's time.
Yes.
As it was, you know, previously.
I want to remind our listeners again, this is Deacon Jim Thorndahl on Holy Family Radio, and I'm talking to Kim Brown, author of Spiritual Lessons Along the Camino, a very interesting book on a 40-day journey that Kim took along this route in Europe. And we're discussing the values and the benefits of taking this journey and what it was like for her. And I want to go to a lesson 8, Kim, that I reflected on, and you were talking about the vineyards there. And the question I come with reflections you had was how am I currently working for God's harvest? What more can I do as a laborer for the harvest? And what prevents me from being a laborer? And I put a footnote on here myself to ask you, in your early years, my question is, what was your greatest fear of talking about Christ, if you had one? Or is it just not being able to talk about him because not enough knowledge?
You know, growing up, we definitely were service Catholics,
mm-hmm.
and I don't ever remember really seeing, you know, what we would call evangelists, you know, somebody just out there constantly proclaiming, you know,
sure.
you know, that I love Jesus Christ is my Lord, you know, God is love. I don't ever remember hearing that or seeing that, but I remember always seeing the Catholics around me doing service, you know,
yeah.
Whether that was, you know, doing the canned food drives or doing things for one of our local homes that, you know, sheltered women that were pregnant, that didn't have a shelter. I just always remember us being service. And so it wasn't that I was necessarily afraid of going out and sharing my faith with other people, but it's just more you do service. You know, a lot of times you hear the saying, don't talk politics and religion. And
exactly.
I am definitely the person now that's like, well, if you're not going to talk about what's important, what are you going to talk about? You know, the weather? I mean, Let's talk about what actually matters.
Exactly.
And so, but just back then, I just don't remember that. And, you know, going in college, you know, definitely a lot of times, you know, it's about being politically correct. A lot of times when people are at their job, you know, they fear, well, I can't talk about my faith, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, the message in the, you know, in the education realm is, you know, you can only talk about your faith if somebody asks you a question.
Exactly.
You know, my job always led to students asking questions. And so because of that, you know, I was very open with my students and we could have conversations about our faith. But the more that I fell in love with my faith, the more that's what I wanted to talk about.
Exactly.
You know, it's becoming that parent that, you know, some people are like, oh no, she's going to show me more photos of her kids on the phone. You know, you love your kids. You are so excited about your kids. You know, the proud grandparent. And you just want to show off all these photos of your kids, even though, you know, other people might be like, ugh, you still keep showing them and you're excited. Well, you know, the same way that when you really are in love with your faith or you can't hide it, you know.
That's right.
The guy that's in love with a girl, he's not hiding that. So why in the world would we hide, you know, our love for God? And so the more that grew, it just became more, that was what kind of dominated my life and my conversation.
You know, when you mentioned the word service, St. James, he probably called it something everybody cringes at, but he called it works, because St. James clearly said that you show me your faith without works, and I'll show you my faith because of my works. And basically, that's what you're saying, is the same thing, is that the outpouring, the manifestation of your faith was the service. And it really was how you demonstrated that you were a Christian or a Catholic.
Very, very much so. And, you know, I think that's one of the great things about one of the great things that have come out of our Catholic heritage is the amount of service that we've had. I mean, you know, there are definitely, you know, times in our history when, you know, Catholics haven't always acted as Christians, you know, as God has called us back. But there are so many great moments and people and the service that the Catholic Church has done all through the history, the way that we have gone out and really, you know, how can we feed, you know, the homeless? How can we clothe them? How can we, you know, take care of them? What about the widows? What about the unborn? What about the elderly? We do an amazing job as a church,
yes,
all through history of taking care. And that service is really who we are. Like, when I think, you know, Catholics, I mean, that is a huge part of our culture. You know, and it's really about, you know, giving our total stewardship, which is that time, talent, and treasure, as opposed to just one or the other. But I mean, that definitely for me is a very big tie-in for how I view our faith, because you really can't, you know, have the faith if you're not doing the works. You know, the works is a direct result of our faith. You know, God calls us this way.
Yes,
you know,
does.
We know what we've been given, so let us give it to others.
Exactly. So now here you are on this journey on the Camino, and you've been telling us some great experience. Was there one particular experience that you can think was probably the most powerful time on journey for you, or was it just a blend of all of them together?
You know, the whole Camino experience for me really was a mountaintop experience.
Okay.
God was so kind, so loving, so giving to me that it was a total mountaintop experience. And so, you know, for me, you know, I can definitely, when I think about it, I can think, well, you know, maybe here's the top five experiences. But I think the one that just really hit home for me, in my life and my faith journey is, you know, we've often probably heard the part where we talk about a tapestry, and, you know, we look at our life from the backside of the tapestry.
Exactly.
Where all the thread is going in and out, in and out, and we're like, what the heck is this picture?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this makes no sense. And that's how we view our life. And then you walk around to the other side, and, you know, you see the beauty of the tapestry. And I think when we're in heaven, we're going to see the front side of the tapestry.
Exactly.
We're going to be up in heaven, and God's going to say, now do you understand why you talked to this person? Because they had this, and this was the outcome of that conversation. And we get to see how our whole life,
yeah,
you know, our actions, our words, the way that we, you know, handled or dealt with people, how that, you know, had that ripple effect, and how that ultimately, you know, came out. We'll understand that, you know, but God, from time to time, I think he does show us the outcome of an action or the outcome of a word, because he knows that sometimes, you know, we're that doubting Thomas, maybe we need a little bit more strength and we need a little bit more faith. And, you know, he knows that we can't just always trust blindly. He knows each one of us differently. And so for me, the experience that I had with the Dutchman and the rosary, was definitely just an experience where it was like, I knew after that experience, I just always want to follow the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
Wherever he is leading me, God has a plan better than mine. I just want to trust him. I want to hear what he's trying to tell me, and I just want to do it, even though it doesn't make sense. And on that day, you know, God said, you know what, Kim, I'm going to show you why you gave him this rosary.
Exactly.
You know, you thought you were coming to town because you thought you were going to do X, Y, and Z, but guess what? You really came to this town for this sole reason. And so
tell that story.
That was
a little
definitely
bit.
Probably a very powerful experience.
Tell them the story about the rosary a little bit.
Okay. So on the one day on the Camino, and, you know, I don't know how much I included in the book or didn't, so I might give a little bit more sometimes when I talk. But pretty much I showed up to this town one night, and I met three women. And this one woman I met, I just knew, for whatever reason, God was telling me to have a conversation with this woman. God was saying, I want you to talk with this woman. So the three women said, well, the next day we're going to walk to this town, you should walk with us. Because they were kind of amazed that I was doing this all by myself, that, you know, I was just showing up in these towns and, you know, not having anybody else to kind of, like, make sure that I was safe. And so normally I was like, well, I don't know, you know, really if I want to go to the same town, because they're not walking that far, but for some reason God's telling me to stay with this woman, so I'm going to trust this, and I'm going to stay with this woman, because in my mind, God was going to have me have this amazing conversation with her, because when we were all talking about our faith, you know, she had, you know, left it very unshaky grounds on where she was at in her Catholic faith, like, mm-hmm. It really sounded like she wasn't practicing anymore.
Right.
So I just thought God was going to use me for an awesome conversation. So that next day, we all take off, and when you say you're going to walk with somebody, pretty much it just means you're going to show up in the same town. It doesn't mean you, like, walk side by side with them.
Of course.
And so we all took off, and around the second mountain town, there was this Hispanic gentleman walking backwards, and he was, you know, saying words that I understood. He was asking for either a bar, a market, food, and he was saying them in Spanish, but I understood enough of it to see that he was trying to find food. Because we had walked through two mountain towns at that point with no bars or any place where you could buy food, so obviously, this guy had to be really hungry, you know, walking up in the mountains and having not ate yet.
Of course.
So I just had a breakfast bar that I had up there, and I just pulled it out, and I gave it to the guy. And this other gentleman saw me do that. And he thought, that was pretty cool, you know, that she stopped and gave him food versus everybody else that was just walking by him. And so that made that guy, and he was from Texas, he came up and we started talking. And so we had this great conversation, and it was just really faith-building. It was really, you know, just, you know, very, you know, holy, awesome conversation about our faith journeys, and just, you know, it was very edifying. And so he's like, I want you to meet my dad. My dad's 75 years old, and we're walking this, you know, and, you know, he's probably farther back than me, but we're going to be staying in this town, and I just really want you to meet my dad. So I said, okay, we'll see. So we get to the town that the three women were supposed to be staying in. The son has already, you know, gone a different way so he can get with his father. And I show up to the town, and I go stay at the church. And then after I drop my bag off, because it's early in the day still, I drop my bag off. And I go back down to the only bar in town, and I get a hot tea. And so I'm sitting there, and the father and the son are there. And we're having this awesome conversation, talking with the father and the son, and I'm drinking my drink. And all of a sudden, they knew two people, who was a Dutchman and a girl from Galway, that come and sit down next to us as well. And so in the seats, I'm in the middle, and the father's sitting next to me, the girl in Galway's on my other side, and then the son's sitting across from his father, and the Dutchman's sitting across from the girl from Galway. And all of a sudden, the girl starts moving around her paperwork, and there's a prayer card that the father sees. Oh. And he says, can I see that? And she hands it to the father. And as soon as she hands this prayer card to the father, the son, he puts his hands down in his head. And I could tell that he got a little emotional, because earlier in our day, the son had, you know, gotten a little emotional when he was talking about his faith. So I could tell, again, he was a little emotional.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, the father's just shaking the prayer card. And the girl next to me starts talking, you know, I was walking, and all of a sudden I found this prayer card. And I just thought it was really beautiful, so I picked it up. But then I thought the person who ever lost it must have lost it. And, you know, they probably want it back. So, but how do I give it to somebody? I don't have a clue who it is. And she's talking a mile a minute and just going on and on. And so then all of a sudden she realizes what's happening. The son, he kind of raises his head, and they realize that it was in the son's backpack. He carried his picture with him so everybody that passed him would see Jesus as they would walk by him.
Oh my.
He had it, and he lost it out of his bag. And so the girl's like, oh, by all means, you know, take it back. You know, the Dutchman, he was on what we call the booze cruise. You know, he was just, you know, him and the Galway were both actually drinking alcoholic drinks.
Uh-huh.
And he was just, you know, he'd be like, I told her it didn't matter. You know, he had just taken a shot at his drink. And so whenever she realizes it's the son's, you know, she says, oh, take this. And then it leads the Dutchman to say, you know, on the very first day of my Camino, I had been given a rosary from a friend back home, and I lost it. And I just felt God immediately leave my hand in my pocket where my rosary was. And I pull it out of my pocket, and I hand it to the Dutchman, and I say, you know, I just know that God's telling me, you know, you're supposed to have this rosary. So he takes the rosary, and him and Galway, because they're both really athletic, apparently, they decide just to go for an evening, you know, couple-mile walk, you know, just for fun, and then come back to their places for the night. And me and the father and the son, we finish talking, and I go to my place where I'm staying the night and, you know, get cleaned up and can check in and everything. And later that night, a few hours later, we're all back down at the bar, me, the father, and the son, and we're just talking again. And all of a sudden, I feel these arms come around me, and from the backside, they give me a big hug, and then he gives me a kiss on the cheek, and it's the Dutchman. And he says that he had been thinking that life wasn't worth living anymore, and he had asked God for a sign. And the fact that a complete stranger gave him that rosary on the day that he asked for a sign, he knew it was a sign that he was supposed to live. When he said that day, I mean, it blew me away.
Yeah.
Because there's all these little moments that had I not been paying attention, I would have missed. Had I not been focused on God and where is God leading me, you know, God told me to stay with that woman because that woman, she was the reason I spent the night in that town. And,
exactly.
And had that day I been walking and I had not given food to that guy walking, trying to find food, the guy from Texas would have never thought I was somebody worth talking to. It would have just been another pilgrim walking.
You know,
had we not had our conversation, me and the son, he would have never wanted me to meet his father. Had I not been sitting there with the father and the son, the Dutchman and the Galway would have never sat down because they knew the father and the son. They had become friends with him. Had the son not lost that prayer card and the girl not picked it up, you know, they would have never realized that the son lost it. And the conversation of losing something would have never come up.
Exactly.
Which means the Dutchman would have never shared that he lost his rosary.
You know,
and I've been afraid to hand this guy, who obviously is not really spending too prayerful, my rosary.
Yeah.
Had I not listened to the Holy Spirit, he would have never had that sign from God that God had intended for him.
You know, Kim, In all time, God knew that you needed to be there. But here's another caveat to this whole story you just gave. You also needed to say yes to the trip to the Camino. And all that you experienced would never happen had you not said, you know, I'm not willing to sell my stuff. I'm not willing to do that. So in that whole journey, it really began with your fiat to say, you know what, I'm willing to follow you, Lord. And then he could continue to orchestrate what he had planned for you. But thanks be to God, you said yes first.
So true on that. I mean, it really is about all those little ways we listen to God and we respond to him. I mean, those make up those big moments.
Yeah, it does. And you know, you said it very well, too. And by the grace of God, we'll be there. When we get to heaven, we're going to fully see what God intended and what all these conversations really meant and how they were all part of our journey with God and with his people and really leading them to a fuller understanding of the truth. And you've done a beautiful job on that. So in the little bit of time we have left, Kim, I would like you to just tell people the value to the truth. First of all, I'd like to have how can they get your book? How do they get that book?
You can definitely buy your book. It's called Spiritual Lessons Along the Camino by Kim Brown. You can purchase it at your local Catholic bookstore. You can also purchase it online on Amazon. They usually have the best online rate, Amazon.com. You can also get it in the Kindle version online at Amazon.
Okay.
And so if you'd like to read it in Kindle format, you're more than welcome to do that. For people that want to buy multiple copies, or if your parish is wanting to do bulk distribution, which they can buy the books for as little as $3 a piece to distribute to their parishioners, they can buy it through my website at kimbrown.info,
okay.
K-I-M-B-R-O-W-N. .info, and that's where they can pick up multiple copies and get that. And for the parishes, they requested we do a Spanish version, and so hopefully that should be coming out before Christmas, that parishes could also have the Spanish version
wonderful.
Distribute at their parish.
Wonderful, wonderful. So your journey was 40 days, and we've got about a couple minutes left. What did you discern out of it, Kim?
My discernment from the Camino, when I finished the Camino, was really, truly, okay, God, your plan's better than my plan. Your timeline's better than my timeline. I'm going to trust you and just keep going the direction you want me to go. I don't know where that ultimately is leading, but I'm going to trust you. And so when I got back from the Camino, I didn't know if he was calling me to religious life or to lay life or to married life. And I was really just open. I came back, and I just started doing parish missions and retreats for people just whenever they would ask me. And after that, and after I guess I finished writing the book while I was in the approval stage, that's when I actually knew God was calling me to religious life. It was actually a year ago, Ascension Thursday at Mass, when I came back from communion. I just had complete peace knowing God was leading me to religious life. And so I began working with my spiritual director and some priests on what that meant for me and what community that I would be entering. And so I'm still in the process of working on that. I will actually be this summer attending the 30-day spiritual exercises. And then from that, I'm going to go to the Institute for Consecrated Life for men and women religious. And then from there, hopefully, I'll be knowing what community God's leading me to.
What a marvelous journey. What a marvelous journey God is taking you on. It all begins, Kim, with your saying yes, because, you know, God wants this marvelous journey for each and every one of us. I can speak for myself in diaconate. Never would I have thought God would take me on the journey he did to become a deacon and to serve his church. And I went kicking and screaming for a little while, I have to tell you. But that's the reality of life, is that you think, like you said, we think we know better than God. And yet he has these marvelous plans. So I always tell people, you know, St. Paul was slaughtering Christians, and here he uses St. Paul as one of the greatest writers of the Gospels, and he leads them to lead his church. So we never know where God is asking us to go, but it's up to us to say yes, and you've done that.
My goal is to keep saying yes and just to keep going wherever he's leading. So
yes.
I ask for your prayers and for those of the listeners as well to just pray for me and to follow God wherever he calls me to go.
We shall do it, Kim. And I want to thank you so much for being here today, because it's been an inspiring talk. Again, we're talking to Kim Brown, the author of Spiritual Lessons Along the Camino. Have a chance to read it. It's got some beautiful lessons in it, a beautiful journey. It's really a journey to listening to God and following where he wants you to go. Thank you so much for being with us, Kim. And I just want to thank you again. We're going to continue to pray for your vocation. May God bless you in all that you do. And I want to thank our listeners, the Holy Family Radio. This is Deacon Jim Thorndale, and I'm saying have a great day. God bless.
You have been listening to Living the Catholic Life with your host, Deacon Jim Thorndale, on Holy Family Radio. If you'd like to listen to this program again or share it with a friend, audio copies are available online at holyfamilyradio.net. Thank you for listening.